Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Head, Heart, and Hands Listening in Coach Practice, The Listening Coach, by Kimberly Dakin Neal. Narrated by Kimberly Dakin Neal. The Listening Coach. Using Head, Heart, and Hands Listening in Coach Practice. Introduction. Why a book about listening? Blake turns off the pavement onto a dirt road leading toward dense woods. He takes a deep breath to calm his nerves and scans the landscape in front of him. Scrubbrush gives way to lush pine forest, and the distant blue mountains beyond disappear the deeper into the woods he goes. The road ends at the next turn. He stops the Jeep in a driveway choked with crabgrass, weeds, cigarette butts, and there he is, MJ Robbins, broad-shouldered, glowering, arms crossed, stance wide. MJ is not happy. Blake wants to throw the Jeep into reverse and get the hell out, but he doesn't. It's his job to talk to MJ. It's his job to get MJ on board with the new environmental rules on wetlands preservation. Blake needs to establish some kind of trust in the next hour that will change MJ's mind about Blake, government regulation, and environmental responsibility. But how? Blake was, at the time of the training, in his early 30s and relatively new to the field. In our beginning sessions, he sat slouched in the back of the room, looking miserable. But when I asked for someone to volunteer a situation that we could process, his was the first hand raised. As he relayed his experience with MJ, I could see heads nodding around the room as the other trainees listened. They had all been in similar situations. I could hear the frustration in Blake's voice and a fair amount of resentment. I offered Blake a chance for a do-over role play with my colleague Robert so that we could analyze the situation and come up with more effective strategies. It quickly became clear what Blake was listening for, a chance to share his extensive knowledge of environmental codes and policies. But that was not the information that would get him to his ultimate goal. Eventually, over time, Blake learned to listen for and tease out very different kinds of information. Opportunities to build alliance and trust, strategies to slow himself down long enough to get curious about a landowner's deeper motivations. This made him much more effective in his work and, by extension, amplified Blake's own job satisfaction as well. We know we need to be good listeners, but what does that really mean? And why, in Blake's situation, was a very specific kind of listening the tool that made all the difference for Blake in connecting with landowners like MJ? It's my intention to give you some answers to this question, and a few more. The fact that you're curious enough about the topic to start listening to this book tells me that you are a few steps ahead of many on the quest to dig deeper into effective listening. In our loud and frenzied Western culture, listening appears to be an assumed skill. As long as there's nothing wrong with our ears, we believe we can listen. For decades, we've been fascinated by learning styles, communication styles, even styles in intelligence. I've come to believe that how we listen and, more importantly, what we listen for is foundational to whatever style we may possess. Many of us in the adult learning space and in multiple corporate programs have also had training in active listening, a total focus on what the speaker is saying, using all five senses, communicating nonverbally to the speaker that we are paying attention. While I find nothing wrong with this effort, I believe many of us have distilled active listening into acting like we're listening, at least until we can jump in and get others to listen to us. Perhaps you too have become aware that we're not living in times that encourage us to listen to each other more proactively. We're continually offered opportunities via social media to bray at each other about, pick anything, politics, culture wars, the latest tirade on Twitter or X. This book offers an invitation to slow down, to take a breath, to begin to notice what we pick up from the people we engage with, regardless of and, in some cases, because of the way we feel about them. I am a trainer and facilitator with a master's degree and 20 years in the field of adult learning. For much of that time, my specialty has been team experience design. The intricacies of adult listening have intrigued me for years, and I've developed the material I'm about to share with you over the course of a decade. The stories here are pulled from my experience as a coach, trainer, facilitator, and theater improviser. All names are changed, of course, to protect privacy. It's my hope that what you hear in this book will inspire deeper curiosity, as I believe curiosity is where good listening truly begins. I am often hired as a communications coach. A few years ago, I got a chance to work with my state's Department of Environmental Protection, DEP. Their field technicians, Blake among them, were having difficulty in conversations with landowners in violation of environmental codes, having to do with a wide range of issues, water pollution, wetlands preservation, pesticides, and so on. Blake's story was fairly typical of the tone in these discussions. Some of them included large dogs. Some of them included firearms. In listening to the fears and frustrations that Blake and his colleagues shared, I got the feeling early on that communication wasn't really the foundational issue. It wasn't a matter of getting the landowners to listen. I needed to train the field techs to listen better. I got curious. The same way any profession has occupational hazards, could there also be particular ways of listening that become more pronounced the longer we stay in a given field? Were there natural tendencies in all of us to listen for specific kinds of information, maybe the kind we know what to do with, while missing other messages that call on skills not as familiar to us? In the same way we have learning and communication styles, could we also have listening styles? As adults, the way we listen and what we listen for could well be influenced by our profession. I recently discovered a new term, déformation professionnelle. It's a French phrase that has to do with how one's occupation skews a person's worldview to such a degree that information becomes deformation, or rather, anti-information. When it comes to listening, if we are in the clutches of déformation professionnelle, we filter out whatever does not resonate with the worldview informed by our profession. It's not even a conscious process. It's an unconscious habit. It makes me wonder, once this term takes hold, if we will be tossing around terms like déformation professionnelle syndrome. Avoiding the consequences of this habitual filter is one reason I undertook the writing of this book and endeavor to outline specifically the advantages and disadvantages of head, heart, and hands listening. Social workers, medical practitioners, and psychiatrists might employ the empathic heart listening, whereas city planners, transportation professionals, and lawyers would land heavily on the problem-solving skills that we'll call hands listening. The DEP field techs, as scientists and data geeks, proved very adept head listeners. They actively listened for opportunities to share their granular knowledge and skill to convince landowners to change their ways. So here's a question. If a landowner is bound and determined to pave over that swampy, stinky wetland in the backyard in order to expand his auto repair business, how well are facts going to work in convincing him otherwise? As Blake discovered, not so much. We're awash in facts. As a culture, facts are something we increasingly tune out, and too much information often makes us feel overwhelmed. If we want to get someone to take a particular action, say, convince a loved one to change their unhealthy eating habits, or a customer to purchase pricier fire retardant materials because they will prove to be a much better value over time, or a patient to get the COVID vaccine, we need to begin listening for something else in these situations. What's that something else? Within this book, you'll discover some answers. You'll find new ways to apply listening as an intentional skill, one we use daily that can enrich our experience and amplify our value in any given situation. We'll dive into the three modalities in listening: head, heart, and hands, foundational to the Waldorf education model that I'll apply in this book for coaching and adult learning sensibilities. You'll encounter new information, stories, and experiments to try here, but you won't find a linear training regimen or a proven curriculum. I've written this book to inspire you to explore your intentions around listening and how we all utilize this skill relative to how we process information. If you come to better appreciate the specific listening modalities you already use, while gaining some skill and a better appreciation for those modes you struggle to access, I'll consider my job done. Here's a quick template to guide you into the model we'll be using. Think of this as an eagle's eye view into what we will uncover. The clouds below you clear, and beneath your wings you suddenly see a new complex structure below. It may not make sense to you right away, but the closer in you get, the clearer the architecture becomes. Head, heart, and hands model overview. Head listeners listen for rational function, facts, numbers, anything that can be measured. The known, established patterns, what's been proven to be true. Time frame, the past. Head listeners are curious about how something works, linear progressions, the factual truth, what, where, when, and how. Heart listeners listen for emotional context, opportunities to build relationship and express empathy. The truth beneath the words. Vocalics, body language, facial expressions. Time frame, the present. What is happening right now? Heart listeners are curious about how someone really feels. The emotional context that informs a situation. Hands listeners listen for problems to solve, actions to take, a strategy, new possibilities. Time frame, the future. Hands listeners are curious about what hasn't been tried yet, what else might work, workarounds, the how in solving a problem. My intention is to reference and reinforce these elements so that you, as a coach, can clarify your own listening within your practice, while also giving you tools to spark curiosity in clients around their own listening. It is my belief, reinforced by experience, that the more we tune in to the information we miss as we listen, and intentionally build skill in tuning in to that information, the more balanced and productive we can become in our personal and professional interactions. On the subject of interactions, it is my hope that tools in this book will help calm the emotional reactivity in so many of our clients' problematic conversations. The tone and tenor of our cultural discourse has become increasingly toxic and stressful. This has amplified the stress and pain for many of our clients. I will share specific tools and relevant questions that align with the listening modalities in the chapters so that you, the coach, can help your clients lower the temperature on their important interactions and improve the nature of their relationships. Additionally, you may find yourself curious about the Waldorf model of early childhood education, as well as the concept and practice of whole-body listening. I won't be going into detail about these in this book, but there are copious resources available to you online. Also, because I found a great deal of alignment in the program that trained me as a coach, I will offer insights from the positive intelligence model at relevant junctures. It is my hope that you will discover similar alignment with your own model of practice. https://www.positiveintelligence.com/program/. This book will also include what I consider an essential addition to any text on listening for coach practice in particular, The Art of Asking Interesting Questions. This is, of course, already the exclusive focus of a number of very fine books. Intentional, productive listening requires the ability to ask questions that will help you quickly build trust and get off the surface with your clients in a way that makes best use of their allotted time with you. At the end of each of the head, heart, and hands modality sections, I'll include a list of probing questions I have found useful in engaging a particular modality. Many of these questions will overlap, but depending on the modality, the answers will be very different. Finally, I'll reinforce what I've already mentioned about the stories in this book. They are based on real-life cases, clients, and entities I've worked with. But any identifying details like names, locations, companies, and so on have been changed or left intentionally vague. The two exceptions to this are in the section on makeshift coffeehouse in Chapter 20 and the restorative justice reference in Chapter 23. I'm glad you're here, and I'm excited for the insights you'll discover in listening to The Listening Coach, Using Head, Heart, and Hands Listening in Coach Practice. Part 1. Learning to Pay a New Kind of Attention. 1. Dave's Story. The Limits of Traditional Leadership Listening. I spent 5 years working in a local nonprofit service exchange. Our primary mission was to encourage members to consider their skills valuable in exchange for a variety of needed services, most of which could be provided by other members. We operated a network of locally situated service exchanges with individuals, as well as establishing partnerships with community nonprofits and small businesses. The exchange grew quickly over a period of about 5 years, but we had just lost our very charismatic executive director to the real estate business. In addition, the founder and primary revenue source was increasingly adamant that we needed to become self-sustaining. Those of us in our respective jobs, I was outreach and training coordinator, were exclusively women. After a 6-month search, the principal funder decided to hire Dave. Dave had a business background. He owned and successfully grew a portfolio of fast food franchises in the Midwestern state that he came from. Entering into our workplace culture, Dave found himself on a very different planet. For those of us already working there, it became clear with Dave's hiring that our mission had become one of organizational sustainability rather than the exclusive focus on addressing community needs. Many of the staff had been in their positions for almost 10 years. They were dedicated to helping build community sustainability through a service exchange model, but organizational sustainability had not been a priority. No one was comfortable with the changes signaled by Dave's hiring. In fact, within a few weeks' time, there was outright hostility. The situation ultimately taught me a great deal about the peculiar passive aggression that can erupt in some female-dominated workplaces under the stress of needed change. Because I genuinely liked Dave and understood what he was trying to do, I was afforded a middle woman position between factions. My focus became largely about helping the staff work through this impasse. Dave did his best, but his background had not prepared him to deal with this particular toxic dynamic. Staff meetings would go something like this. An enthusiastic Dave begins with, "Hey there, thanks for coming in this morning, and I hope we can wrap this up in no more than 45 minutes because we all have things to do, right?" Silence. Someone, Kathy, coughs. Dave moves on. He turns to the vivid charts he's put together on our membership numbers, our income, and our outlay over the last quarter. All but the third category have red arrows pointing down. "Looks like we have some work to do, right?" He continues explaining the stats and making the case for increasing both our membership numbers as well as the annual membership fee in order to balance what we have spent on numerous community projects. There is really no disputing the numbers. I look around to gauge the group reaction. Kathy looks down at the table. Rhonda looks up at the ceiling. Michelle, Liz, and Taylor are glaring at Dave. He asks, "So, anyone have any ideas on how we can get out of the red?" Again, he's met with silence. He's working very hard to contain his frustration. The team pushes back with their concerns. In the past, the founder has taken care of any financial discrepancies. Members will quit if they have to pay more. More members will ultimately mean more staff hiring, and so on. Dave counters with, "We all agreed at the start of the year that this organization needs to become sustainable, as the founder can't support it indefinitely. This is the reality we have to work with." More awkward silence. Rhonda looks at her watch. Dave, I have to meet with our tech guy in 10 minutes, and I need to prep." Dave takes a deep breath. "Okay, I know we're at time, but can I at least ask you to come back next week with some workable possibilities?" Tired heads nod. He gets a few murmurs of okay, and everyone trudges out of the room. He had tried hard to engage everyone involved in his idea of productive dialogue, but Dave was stymied by the muted response he received. Along with the staff tendency to nod their heads in meetings and then do things exactly the way they always had, little was accomplished. Dave became more and more frustrated and understandably irritable with the rest of the staff. This just made the situation worse, of course, as everything Dave said and did was now fed through the defensive filter of the women's negative expectations. They felt bullied and unheard. They clearly thought he did not understand or appreciate the organization's foundational mission. And a black and white, good and bad, all or nothing binary set in. This dynamic was on track to make everyone's participation, no matter how committed, much more difficult. Finally, one Monday morning, our staff meeting started differently. No charts, no red arrows. Dave wasn't standing. He sat down with us. He took a deep breath and began. "I know these last weeks have been really difficult for you, and I haven't made it easy." I heard Rhonda take a deep breath. Dave continues, "I'm also aware that many, maybe most of you, don't feel as if your concerns have been heard by me or by the founder." Michelle widens her eyes and looks down at the table. No one speaks. Dave clears his throat. "Well, that changes as of today." He takes a deep breath. "I'm asking for your help. I want you to know that I am listening. Please help me understand what I am missing." It took a while and a bit more prompting from Dave, but eventually each staff member shared a litany of concerns, member stories of both hardship and success. vital programs that needed to be fully funded, not cut in the interests of sustainability. Dave would ask a clarifying question, but he mostly stayed quiet, wrote down some notes, and thanked each person for their input, even if it was uncomfortable to hear. The meeting took 3 hours. Everyone was pleased when he treated us all to lunch. It's interesting what happens when the target of our animosity is suddenly vulnerable and authentic. We are faced with a choice. We can engage in healing the relationship to improve the situation, or we can instead continue to invest in the animosity. Taylor did not trust Dave. And she had proven to be, as in Amanda Ripley's excellent book, High Conflict, a conflict entrepreneur, someone whose stature rises by feeding animosity and pushing others toward deeper conflict. Once the toxin recedes, however, those who have been promoting it often lose credibility. It was clear to the rest of us that Dave had finally calmed down enough to understand his part in the toxicity and that he needed to listen more deeply to the why behind the staff's resistance. It took some time and a lot of processing, but eventually, as Dave continued to listen to their concerns, the staff felt better able to trust him, and they could focus their efforts on a multitude of ways to become sustainable without severely compromising the mission. Taylor left her position within 2 weeks. If I had known then what I know now, I'd have advised Dave from the beginning to listen with new ears. He was listening primarily for problems that needed solving, and for ways to apply his extensive grasp of established business protocol and procedures. These two modes, which I will refer to as hands and head listening, are often perceived by our culture as key components in leadership skills. However, without an intention to listen for opportunities to build alliance, grasp larger context, and tune in to the truth beneath the words, heart listening, the classic perception of leadership can only go so far. Listening exclusively for data and problems to solve will not lead to building empathy and the ability to tune into another's reality. This requires the ability to excavate conversational layers and uncover the truth beneath the words. This requires intentional heart listening. For Dave and many of the rest of us, however, there are significant cultural obstacles that need to be acknowledged before we can amplify our own listening capacity. It's worthwhile to acknowledge what is stacked against us before we begin to discern the listening modalities of head, heart, and hands. That's where we are headed in the next chapter. 2. Obstacles to listening. What gets in the way? You may have noticed that life has gotten louder. It's not just the din of traffic, the sirens, or the plethora of social media voices all vying for our attention. We have earbuds and headphones and multiple ways to block out what we don't want to pay attention to, as we try to focus and make our way through an ever more amplified world. Between our devices, our condensed environments, and a cultural need for speed, there are significant obstacles to effective listening that are mostly beyond our awareness. But their impact hampers our ability to connect with each other in ways that affect our individual lives, our businesses, and the culture we all share. Obstacle 1. Pace of modern life. Hamster wheel in hyperdrive. The genesis of this book began during the global pandemic. As a result of that calamity, with 80% of my in-person contracts gone up in smoke, I found myself suddenly with lots of time on my hands. By the time you hear this, I truly hope the world has recovered from this horrible illness and the resulting economic devastation. To be honest, I had secretly hoped for a silver lining in the COVID crisis. Once we're forced to slow down, we have, if we choose, an opportunity to stand back from the frenetic hamster wheel so many of us are on. We can then be more discerning about how we prioritize.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?